sleep, relationships, work, diet, movement.
Oh my gosh, there is so much on here. I want to sit and watch.
Your heart rate increases. Your breath starts to change.
I don't want to waste a session on yoga because it's not muscle building.
Well, is it hard? Is it going to be dynamic and challenging? Is it going to be that I'm lying on a mat for half an hour?
What is yoga?
All these things are happening, but we're just not aware of them. And they've become so normal to us. If you don't believe in the power of your mind, you can't believe anything is possible. Of course, there's moments of self-doubt. If you come back to yourself, all the answers are there. And then when you see it, you're actually able to address it.
Welcome to the Anything Is Possible podcast, and welcome to my guest, Angie Tiwari, who is the founder of Unearthed. Unearthed is a yoga, meditation, and breathwork company. And that's why I'm kind of dressed down today, if you're watching on YouTube, because I felt like I needed to be chilled and in my zen. Angie, just give us like a synopsis of you and your business.
So I teach yoga, meditation, and breathwork. And through that, it's, for me, really all about making it accessible to people, because there are lots of people that teach yoga and you can go to a gym and do yoga. But I think there are a lot of myths that surround that topic. And so for me, it's really important to try and encourage people that you can do it, and you can do it in a really small way, whether that's 1 minute in your day, incorporating a breathing technique to help you if you're feeling a little bit stressed, or if you want to roll out your mat and do an hour of movement and boost your mobility and flexibility.
So if you're going to like explain yoga as a practice rather than the thing that I think of it as, like an exercise class, and I understand there are so many benefits to it, but just talk us through, like, what is yoga?
It's such a broad topic, and that's why it's such a complex question to answer. But yeah, you're right. A lot of us see yoga as something that you roll out your yoga mat, you get in your active wear, and you move. And that is a big part of it, absolutely. But there's so many different elements to it. I mean, even with the movement, there are practices that are really slow and really kind of grounding and help you. If you are a gym bunny, great for really stretching and toning. But then if you want a bit more of a challenge, then there are yoga classes that are much more powerful, energizing, dynamic. And so even within movement, there's so many different elements to it. But essentially, the practice is about unity. So the word yoga is actually from the Sanskrit yog, which means to unite or to bring together. And I think probably you and a lot of your listeners will resonate with this idea of kind of sitting down at the dinner table with your best friend, you've not seen them in ages, and you're having a really nice catch up, and your body is there, but then there's a moment where your mind kind of wanders off to maybe an argument you had with someone the other day, or something, you know, someone walks by and you feel triggered by something and your mind suddenly goes elsewhere. And so yoga is the practice of bringing our mind, our body, and our spirit together in one place so that we're more present, and so that we can get to this higher level of consciousness. We're less wrapped up in all of the rubbish that's happening in our life and thinking that it's the worst thing in the world and being so attached and associated with our ego. And we're able to just feel a little bit about everything. And I think probably the most important thing in making it work for you is, because it is such a broad practice, you need to figure out what you want from it. So I completely agree. And I'm a big gym goer as well, but I was a really big gym bunny at the time of discovering yoga. And I think what's really important, because I had that exact same thought of, well, I could go to spin or I could go to yoga, but I want to work out, I want to sweat, you know, I'm going to go spinning. And I think it's about figuring out, well, what do you want from it? Do you want a kind of strengthening practice? Nothing wrong with that at all. Then you want to be looking for like a dynamic vinyasa, power, ashtanga. Those are the kind of words you're looking for in a class. I know it's tricky because sometimes in gyms it just says yoga and you're like, well, is it hard? Like, is it going to be like dynamic and challenging, or is it going to be that I'm lying on a mat for half an hour? And I think that's a problem that gyms should really specify. Restorative yoga, dynamic yoga. Like, there needs to be clarification for the people who are coming to the class. But if you want to have more of a meditative practice that's slower, that allows you to slow down, and you feel happy to do that because you've done your 5 gym sessions that week or however many it was, and you want to focus more on mobility and flexibility, which does help your strength training, then there's that. So it's kind of figuring out from a movement perspective, what do you want to get out of it so that you don't have that feeling of, oh, I've wasted that hour or I could have been doing something else.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. So what I'm sort of hearing is you could approach it in potentially like three ways. So if you want to get stronger, which obviously is, it's obvious when you see a yoga class in terms of like the handstands, the balance, all of that, you've got to be pretty strong for that. So you could come to it from a strength point of view. You could come to it from a stretch point of view. And I have to say that's something I've thought about is actually, right, I'm feeling really stiff this week, but I'm not very disciplined about doing my stretches. But if I book myself on a class, that would potentially help. So I guess that's like injury prevention, lengthening of muscles. And the other one as well, when we talk about like the spiritual side and the meditation, have I got it right in that, like, so I've been to a yoga, which I think is called yin yoga, where you basically sort of lie in a position essentially for sort of 4 minutes. And that almost feels like I'm just going, I enjoyed it, but it feels like I'm just going for like a little bit of a, like mini snoozes. But I know that that's very good as well, isn't it? Is that more of a meditative yoga, would you say?
It's so interesting because in the faster dynamic classes, people often label them as hard, and they can be physically challenging, yeah, but actually mentally they could be quite easy for many people because you're moving from one pose to the next to the next. And that can feel like a bit of a moving meditation because you're kind of really in the flow of it and you're not thinking of anything else. But it's funny because in a slower practice like a yin, so the opposite really, you know, a dynamic practice, you're doing quite a lot of poses. Yin, like you said, you might do in an hour class, you might do like 8 yoga poses, just 8, but you'll hold them for a long period of time. Now, some people think, oh, that's slow and easy. But actually, that can be really challenging because even though you're not doing as many poses, there's more time for your mind to start thinking and you start bringing up all these triggers and you get... So it can feel more meditative, but you also can notice how busy and stressed your mind is. And then it's about how are you responding to that? And can you allow yourself, you know, we're not very good in society at letting ourselves slow down. We need to be go, 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 go. So if you are like that, you're more likely to go to a dynamic practice, but you should challenge yourself by going to a yin practice and seeing, can I let myself just sink into this posture? Because mentally you're going to get those meditative benefits of being able to kind of quieten the mind or just watch what the mind is doing and increase your awareness and your consciousness. But also you'll notice when you hold a pose for a longer period of time, you've got to kind of get deeper and deeper into that stretch. You kind of feel your body opening up a little bit more the longer that you're in it, and you will feel a lot looser. And it's the physical tension that we hold because we're doing workouts or we're sitting down all day, but we store a lot of emotional tension in our body, especially hips, lower back, shoulders. So we're holding that tension, yeah, emotionally. You know, it's so funny, there's a pose called pigeon pose, which a lot of people know, even if you're not into yoga. Yeah. And the amount of people that at my classes, on my retreats, will be crying their eyes out in pigeon pose because it's just unleashing something in that part of the body. So there's so many different benefits. And I wouldn't say that one of them's more meditative than another because it kind of depends on what's happening within your mind when you're in the class, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And so if you were... Right. Okay. So we say you've got two camps and you've got, say, me that wants to make sure they get their weight session in, their barriers, blah, blah, blah. So let's say I said to you, right, I'm doing like 3 weight sessions, 2 runs a week. And on my like restorative days, let's say, what would you advise? I guess you're probably going to say it's down to your goals, but how would you spend those 2 coins? So I've got 2 coins for yoga. Where would you say to go with those?
I think if you're doing a lot of weight training and strength building and that kind of thing, then the best way for you to practice yoga would be, I would say 20 minutes, because that's really easy to fit in. Yeah. And you know, you can do it on a restorative, on a rest, on a slower day. Roll out your mat and 20 minutes where you're not necessarily rushing through the poses, but you're really focusing on incorporating your breath with your movement, which is a really, really big focus. And every yoga teacher should be focusing on that. But often in the faster classes, it's easy to lose your breath. So really incorporating slowing down doing things like pigeon pose, which is good for your hips, lower back, opening up through lizard pose. Again, yeah. Those kind of really opening, that's going to help. It basically is going to help go alongside what you're already doing. Conversely, if you were doing, you know, a lot of mat bar and Pilates and you weren't doing as much kind of strength weight training as you're doing, then maybe you could do something a bit more dynamic, and that would incorporate, you know, when we move through a posture, we kind of go from plank all the way, lower ourselves down, almost doing kind of a push-up, almost like we're going to do a push-up, but you lower yourself down and you pull yourself up. It's called a sun salutation, and then you push yourself back into your downward facing dog. That's a really dynamic, challenging movement that if you've been strength training and weight training and doing your bicep curls and whatever it is all week, that's going to tire you out even more. So it kind of depends on what you want. But I think, yeah, something that allows you to really work into the parts of the body that you've been working hard the rest of the week, that allows you to open up a bit more. Yeah. And once you have a few poses under your belt, you don't even need to go to a class. You know, if you know how to do your pigeon pose, your lizard pose, child's pose, really, really focus on breath, close your eyes in certain poses, see how that feels, and then do some really deep breathing to help calm your nervous system, then that's going to be really, really beneficial for you.
Amazing. And then if you've got the person that literally wants to get all their fitness from yoga, how does that look for them?
So again, doing anything that's got the label of dynamic, energizing, vinyasa, power, rocket, anything like that is going to be quite a physically challenging class. You're still incorporating your breath to each movement you take, but you're more likely to see things like arm balances. You can challenge yourself with lots of plank poses. You can do a lot of balance challenge, which balancing is really good for your mobility and but also your core strength. You know, you're holding your core to be able to balance on one leg. So those are great classes for building strength. But I would also say that, you know, you're always going to come to an end where things then slow down. You know, every intense or every yoga class, whether it's intense or it's a really soft, slow one, is going to end in a calming posture. It might be seated or it might be lying down flat on the mat in Shavasana, which is your corpse pose. So you're going to taper to a slow, soft end. And even in the most challenging, hard, dynamic, energizing classes, I have felt the biggest sense of, wow, I just feel incredible, and really meditative and really connected. So it's not just the slower classes that give you that. But yeah, definitely that kind of class is going to really help your fitness as much as it is also going to help your mindset.
And then just talk to us about sort of, you mentioned like the ego, obviously it being considered sometimes a spiritual practice and for meditation. Now for someone like me that tries to do, I do like mindful meditation, mindfulness, so not connecting with thoughts, for example. So for someone like me that has to keep their mental health in check and I have to do certain things like that to keep on top of it, how could I use yoga as part of my mental well-being as well as my physical well-being?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we look at yoga as being just the movement and then meditation as being something else, whereas really meditation, the breathing techniques, the philosophy, they all fall under the bracket of yoga, which is why on the Unearthed membership platform, you'll see so many different types of classes, because yoga is such a broad topic. But essentially, one of the biggest things I will tell people if they want to check in with their mindset is being aware of their breath. Breath awareness.
Right.
And checking in with how are you breathing in your everyday? How are you breathing when you get that email from someone at work and you feel a little bit tense? And how can you change your breath to calm everything down? The breath is a really powerful gateway into our mind. So it can tell us a lot about what we're thinking, what we're feeling. And it can feel a little bit easier to some people than meditation, where a lot of people, again, debunking these myths, a lot of people think they've got to sit down in meditation and be quiet and not think of anything. And that's really challenging for lots of people. Whereas if you can sit and be aware of your breath, it gives you something to focus on. And that can sometimes help people to look after their mind as much as the physical practice helps them mentally and physically. The breathing techniques are incredibly powerful.
And what's the connection with yoga and ego then as well? I've listened to quite a lot on ego, particularly with Oprah Winfrey and Eckhart Tolle. Is it Eckhart? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that talks about, so many decisions are made from the ego and you need to detach from the ego. So how does that work with yoga practice? I'm curious.
Yeah, so ego comes up a lot in yoga philosophy. So essentially, we are so wrapped up with the ego. And to break down what the ego is it's the sense of I.
Yeah, I love this.
It's I am the most important person in the world. And, you know, if something happens, we feel so attacked and we take things so personally, and we kind of think that the whole universe revolves around us. You know, it's very easy to get wrapped up in our own issues in life and not zoom out and think.
Just a reminder that the best way you can support the show is to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and a little review for what you think of our show wherever you listen to your podcasts. It only takes a second and may seem like a small thing, but it helps us rank in the podcast charts, find new listeners and reach even more amazing guests. So with your review, you're actually helping to improve the Anything Is Possible show.
Does this actually matter? Because we kind of, you know, the ego wants to be right. So when we feel something's going against us, the ego is there saying, no, I've been wronged. I need to be right. It's I. All the sense of I. So we see the concept of ego come up in a lot of our yoga philosophy sessions. And how does it show up on your yoga mat? Well, I need to be able to do this pose. If I can't do this pose, I'm not good enough. I need to be more flexible. I need to... You know, all of this idea of what do I need to do to be the best, to be the greatest. And, you know, this is not to say that we shouldn't have goals, that we shouldn't work hard, that we shouldn't have things that we want to achieve. You know, as humans, we're always going to want that. But it's about understanding, well, when is that tipping into a place that's really controlling us negatively? And can you instead find satisfaction? Say if you're in your yoga class and you're working towards a handstand, can you actually enjoy the journey of building strength before you even get anywhere near the handstand? You know, because otherwise we're just kind of working to the goal. You know, it's like if you're going on a hike and if you're just constantly looking at the peak of the mountain, you're not enjoying the journey to it. And you're getting frustrated along the way. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the top and you're like, ah, I did it. But you've got to enjoy that route forward. So on our yoga mats, it shows up like trying to get into a particular pose and not feeling good enough. And in life, it translates into, well, do you know what? Can I just work really hard and then detach from any outcome? Like, it doesn't matter what's going to happen here because I've done all that I can. And just being a little bit detached from what the expectation is of what we want to happen, because we can't control that. We can only control how we respond, and we can only control what we can contribute and what we can do.
Yeah, I always say that in goal setting, like I love setting goals, but honestly, like sometimes I don't achieve them, but actually I've enjoyed the process of setting them along the way. And I think that sometimes, you know, enjoy the journey. I think that's sometimes things that, you know, people forget, don't they? Mm-hmm. So within, like, obviously your family of things that you look after, you've got the yoga and then the meditation. So talk us through, like, to be a meditation practitioner, is that a qualification? And then what sort of strands do you have under that, I guess?
Yeah, so you'd qualify as a yoga teacher. Most people do their 200-hour yoga teacher training as the base.
Yeah.
And then you can do additional training after that in meditation, in different types of yoga. So I trained in Ashtanga yoga, which is a really dynamic, energizing, quite fast-paced practice, quite intense. So you could do that, and then you could go on and train in yin yoga or restorative yoga or power yoga or pregnancy and postnatal yoga. There's so many different styles and types that you can qualify in. And on top of that, then you can do qualification in meditation, qualifications in breathing techniques, breath work. There's just so many different trainings that are out there now. So you tailor it to what you want to learn about. But yeah, meditation is a huge part of the practice of yoga, and it is about getting clearer and finding stillness within the mind. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, like you said, there's lots of different types of meditation. So you could do a meditation that focused on being aware of the thoughts and just allowing them to keep on going, as opposed to getting so involved in the story of that thought. And I'm feeling this way because that person did this. And if she hadn't have done that, then I wouldn't have, you know, trying to stop that internal dialogue that dramatizes everything. And again, is all about attachment and that ego state. But you can also do one of my favorite types of meditation is a visualization meditation, because that's so powerful.
And
Well, it links in with manifesting, because it's really about visualizing yourself. And, you know, when you win it in your mind and you believe it in your mind, you're way more likely to feel empowered and inspired and then put the steps in place to achieve those goals. Or, you know, you start to visualize yourself doing something that you hadn't seen before. Our brains are very intelligent, but they're also not in some way, because you can just imagine something and your brain thinks it's real. You know, say for example, you heard a noise in your house and it was the middle of the night and it's probably something outside on the road, but you in your mind start imagining that someone has broken in, and your body will completely react as if you're about to be attacked. Your nervous system goes into a state of dysregulation. Your heart rate increases. Your breath starts to change. You start looking for your nearest exit, visualizing everything that's going to happen. And in the same way that we can kind of imagine a situation and respond like that, you can change it to be a positive one. You can change it to be you presenting a big talk on stage in front of a load of people, maybe something that you never thought you'd be able to do before. And really feel into the power of that. And that gives you that inner confidence. And it sounds crazy because you're just thinking it in your head. But we know how powerful just the thoughts that we have are. So visualization is a really, and it's a very fun type of meditation, because it's not sitting there thinking of nothing. It's sitting there kind of creating a bit of a story for what you want your life to look like.
Do you know, it's funny, because when I was little, I used to daydream a lot. Like, I've got loads of vivid memories. I've been in the car with mum and dad, like we'd drive to France or whatever, and I would literally daydream stuff. And then you don't do that as you grow up. But if you were, and I love the idea of visualization. It's something Roxy Nafusi talks about as well with her book Manifest, she's been a speaker at AIP. So if you were going to like visualize something, let's say for me, it would be, you know, the room filled with people for anything is possible and like it all going to plan. How often should we be doing visualization meditation per week, let's say?
So whenever I get asked a question on how often we should do something, I always like to say little and often, as opposed to, you know, every day for half an hour. That's possible for some people and it's absolutely not for so many. So I always say that you've got to find what works best for you. I don't know what your lifestyle is like. I don't know how many kids you've got. I don't know what your day-to-day job is. Like, I don't know how busy you as an individual are, but I think that finding time to do it consistently is more important than doing it once, forgetting about it, and because it took too long to do and you didn't have the time for it, and then doing it a week later. Try and do it little and often. And one other thing I'd say is find a micro habit and add it on. So for example, you could do your visualization when you wake up in the morning. Maybe wake up 5 minutes before your alarm usually is, so that you don't feel rushed to jump out of bed. And do a bit of visualization then. Or before you go to bed in the evening, if you're going to spend 5 minutes usually scrolling on your phone, put your phone in a different room and spend those 5 minutes visualizing. Similarly, when I brush my teeth, I will get in some movement. So I will do some shoulder rolls when I've got my electric toothbrush going. I'll shoulder roll to the front, shoulder roll to the back. I'll do my hip circles. You know, it's little things like that, because it doesn't seem like much, but, you know, it does add up over time. And then your body just gets used to it. Your mind gets used to the practice. So little and often, because then you're building that habit in your brain. So whatever works best for you, there's no kind of ideal duration of time, but it's about also getting into that creative zone, because like you said, as adults, we're not really encouraged to daydream. So it's almost getting ourselves back into that state of, oh, I can be quite fun with this and playful.
And do you have these guided meditations on your platform? Because for me, somebody that's like a busy mind, I find it quite hard to do meditations myself, you know. Mm-hmm. And those are the sort of things you've got on your platform. You can pick a type of meditation.
Yeah, exactly. So the section, that's all sectioned off into whether you want to move, whether you want to do a journaling practice, philosophy, meditation, breath work. And then you can type in visualization meditation, for example. And we've got 3 guest teachers. So it's not just classes by me, it's classes by a few other teachers as well who are based across the UK and the US. So you can kind of find a teacher in a style, because there's so many different ways of teaching too. So it's nice to learn from different teachers. But yeah, loads of different classes on meditation. And we've got a Reprogram Your Mind in 5 days, which is kind of a course series that you would do one every day. So if you want to implement it, it's good to start a series like that where you're like, right, Monday to Friday this week, I'm going to commit. And then you can see how you feel at the end of the week. I would do it time and time again before I went into any big important event that I was running. I will never go to an event without seeing photos of the location. Because when I see photos of the location, I can then visualize myself in that location. And it really makes, because then when you're there, you like, I've been here before. I know what I'm doing. I've done this before. You haven't, but your mind thinks it has. So it feels a lot calmer. It feels a lot more like you're in control.
And the other thing that you and I have talked about is Ayurveda, which is a practice of yoga, acupuncture, herbal massage, and also diet. So I had heard of this before I met you, and I said I've got a real natural interest in it that I haven't dug deep into or pursued yet. So another reason I was excited to have you on the podcast. But for those of people that haven't heard of it, can you explain what that is to us?
Yeah, so again, I always like to go back to what does the word actually mean? So Ayurveda, Veda is knowledge. And Ayu is life. So it's like the knowledge of life, the science of life. And essentially it's an ancient holistic healing modality. So it's an ancient practice. It's kind of known as the sister science of yoga. And both yoga and Ayurveda have been written about for centuries and centuries in ancient texts, 5,000 plus years ago. But essentially Ayurveda is holistic healing. So how do I explain that in English? You know, if you were to go to the doctor and you had something, if you had kind of inflammation on your hand, let's say, you're probably going to be given a topical cream to apply to your hand and told to come back in a week once your topical cream, antibiotic, whatever has kind of finished. And you're less likely to have a full consultation around when did this inflammation start? What's happening in your work life? What's your diet like? What are your bowel movements like? How's your sleep been recently? Whereas if you went to an Ayurvedic consultant, an inflammation on your hand is not just caused and solved by a cream being applied, because we believe that inflammation lies deep in the body. There's a reason behind it. So it might, of course, it might be that you've had an allergic reaction to something. Absolutely. But a lot of the time, the inflammation is caused by stress. So if 90% of inflammation is caused by stress and there's an inflammation on the skin, the questions that we would ask as an Ayurvedic consultant, I would be looking into your relationships, your work, your diet, what you're putting in your body, your sleep, your bowel movements, any other skin issues. And it's much more looking at the individual as a whole, as opposed to looking at you and looking at the other person. You know, say if they're 2 people and you both had inflammation on your skin, in Western medicine, generally, you're both given that topical cream. Whereas from an Ayurvedic perspective, 2 people might have inflammation on the skin, but we would look into holistically, individually, what's happening in your life compared to the other person's life, and you'd get different treatments, even though you had the same condition. Because the same condition is not always caused. Yeah. It's what are the factors that are causing that condition? So it's much more looking at the person full body, full perspective. And I think now we're seeing Western medicine go a little bit more in that direction, you know, understanding the connection between your gut and your brain. That's been a really big thing within Ayurveda, for centuries. So it's nice to see that we're honoring and respecting that, you know, your mind is so powerful and it could be creating illness in the body.
Just to people that aren't necessarily aware of the term, what is inflammation within the body?
Swelling, redness, pain shows up for people in different ways. So it might be that you've got an internal pain, but you can't actually see anything, in which case there would be no redness. There would be no kind of obvious signs for you, but you would be feeling an inflammation. Yeah. A good idea of that is, you know, when you feel bloated, but to another level, like the bloating, your gut feels sore and swollen as if it's kind of
sore.
Red raw. You almost imagine that in the inside it's red, but you can't see that, but it just feels so painful. So that would be a symptom of inflammation. Obviously, seeing a rash that's red, that's painful, that's maybe itchy, you know, there's some inflammation that then becomes itchy, shows up in lots of different ways. But like I said, 90% of it is caused by stress. And that's why it's so important to understand what's causing you stress and being aware. You know, one of the biggest things that yoga has taught me is, and Ayurveda, but it's to be more aware of how everything in my life is impacting me, because how everything in your life impacts you then goes into a deeper level from a health perspective and impacts our bodies. And it's just understanding that, then you can save yourself so much hassle and pain later along the line, and you can prevent a lot of that inflammation from happening.
So it's a bit, there's a book, isn't there, called The Body Keeps Score? And you've talked about being aware of stress. And I think we're all guilty in different ways of just keeping going because we don't want to admit I might be stressed. What would be some, like, and we have talked on the podcast with other people about burnout before, for example, and that doesn't need to just be somebody burning out because of work. It could be raising a family or just generally unresolved issues or whatever. Could you sort of give us some hints and tips on how to recognize stress itself? What would be the telltale signs?
I think a really, really good exercise is journaling. So grab a notebook, grab a pen, and divide it into sleep, relationships, work, diet, movement. And then just write a little paragraph that summarizes how you feel about those elements. And so you get a good picture of your life. You know, if you've got a really troublesome relationship with work, you hate your job. So many people absolutely hate their job. You're going to then see that on a piece of paper. Relationships, it might be that you're stuck in an oppressive relationship. It might be that you've got friends in your life that are really toxic and you know that, but they're your friends, so you don't really know what to do.
Have you been wondering what Anything is Possible Live 2024 is all about? It's a 12-hour personal development experience from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Beyond the amazing content that is going to help you achieve your dreams, we have got mega brands, delicious food and drink, unique activations, and much more. This is the sign you have been waiting for. It is time to invest in yourself and be part of something amazing. I really hope to see you there. Link in the bio to buy your tickets.
It might be that you realize in the movement section that you actually don't really move during the day. You're kind of sat at a laptop all day. You're not doing any movement. You might realize that your diet is based on the stress of everything else that we've just mentioned. And so you're stress eating. So you don't have good times that you're eating. Maybe you're eating really late. Maybe you're eating in a rush when you're kind of running somewhere. Then that gives you a really good kind of overview as to, okay, what's happening? Because all these things are happening, but we're just not aware of them. And they become so normal to us. When you write it on paper, not only does it alleviate the pressure of it being in your mind, but you can also see it a lot more clearly. And then when you see it, you're actually able to address it. Because the first step is the denial of, I don't wanna, and I think it's a big reason people don't go to yoga or meditation, because they do not want to address the pain of that stress, because it's not easy for a lot of people. Right? Like there's deep rooted issues a lot of the time. And that's hard to acknowledge, let alone address and do something about it. But when you write it down, you can see it a little bit more clearly. And then starts the work. do you want to get a therapist and start working through therapy? Do you want to start, right, once a week I'm going to do this fitness class because that's going to make me feel better and get some movement in and do something for myself? Is it more about, especially if you're a parent and you're running around raising a family, is it about 5 minutes every day where you kind of really focus on doing a face mask and a skincare routine, something that just makes you feel a bit more pampered? Like, what is it? Because, you know, there's not one fix to stress, and it really depends on what you feel you need in your life. Again, it can't be a generic answer for everyone, because it depends on how much time you have and it depends on what you feel is lacking. So, but yeah, getting it out of your head and onto paper is hugely valuable.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and identify where the stress points are coming from. So back to the practice of Ayurveda. You talked about the doshas. I think why it appealed to me when I first heard about it was to do with all the different foods that you're suited to. And I know there's one section that's like cinnamons, vanillas, which is like so me. Can you talk us through like those elements of it?
Mm-hmm. And that's actually the key word that you just said, is elements. So essentially there are three doshas, Vata, Pitta and Kapha.
Yeah.
And the three doshas are made up of the five elements. So that's water, air, ether, fire, earth. And so when it comes to the food, well, when it comes to each dosha, so say for example, let's take Vata dosha, that is made up of the elements of ether or space and air. So it's quite kind of light, floaty. So tend to be the people who tend to have that predominant Vata dosha within them. They're quite go, 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 quite fast paced. They move quite a lot, very creative minds, lots of thoughts coming quite a lot. That's absolutely fine. But it may be that they've been go, 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 go a lot during the day. So they've got more of that element of air and ether running through them. That could then tip into an imbalance. They're trying to go to bed and the mind is too busy, because there's too much movement. That also we see in the gut health. Yeah. There's a lot of wind and a lot of bloating. So eating foods for a Vata dosha predominant person who's in an imbalance, you'd want to eat foods that are grounding. So thinking things like stews, nice kind of warming curries, that kind of thing that will help nurture and ground the fast-paced movement of the ether and the air. Or doing practices like an oil massage of the whole body. You can do that on your own. Fully oiling the whole body is really good for lubricating all of your tissues, but it's also, again, has that calming, grounding effect. So it just slows down the busyness and the hecticness. Then you've got Pitta dosha, which is made up of the elements of fire and water. So someone who's got Pitta dosha, very competitive, very determined, very kind of got a goal and they will make that goal happen. But sometimes that can tip into competitiveness. It can tip into fieriness because of that fire element, anger. It can tip into a real sense of frustration and feeling let down and like they're not good enough because they've set themselves such big goals for what they want to achieve. So with someone who's Pitta dosha, again, if you feel like it's tipping into an imbalance, then you would want to avoid things that would aggravate that fire because you've already got a lot of that fire element. So if you've got an imbalance, you'll also maybe see it as a red raw inflammation, as opposed to, you know, if you have eczema, eczema on the Pitta dosha would be kind of red raw bloody eczema, whereas a eczema on someone who's Vata dosha would not be red or raw. It would be more kind of dry flaking skin. So even if you have so they're both eczema, but they're different types of eczema. So things like, dry flaking skin on your scalp, like psoriasis, that's a Vata dosha imbalance. Whereas a red flaking scalp psoriasis on the head that's also bleeding and kind of really, really red raw, that's more of a Pitta dosha imbalance. Yeah. So you'd want to look at, you know, coffee, red wine. They're quite inflammatory from an Ayurvedic perspective for that fire element. In Ayurveda, we don't say there's any food that's good or bad. And we don't say that you've got to cut anything out for life. The belief is everything in moderation. but being aware that if there's an imbalance, okay, if I'm really, really fiery this week and I've had like an argument with someone, I feel very fired up in with passion about this project I'm working on, avoiding coffee for that week or so, avoiding red wine, because those are things that will add more of the fire element. Are good things to start avoiding for a couple of weeks, and incorporating cooling foods or foods with cooling properties, like coriander has really good cooling properties. A lot of the herbs and spices, cumin is great for digestion, cloves, all of that kind of stuff. And then lastly, the kapha dosha is made up of the elements of earth and water. So quite stable, quite grounding. You know, you meet those people who are just constantly chill and you're like, wait, how are you so...
Yeah.
You're calm.
That I aspire to be.
So that is predominantly someone who is kapha dosha. And so even though that sounds like really idyllic, they're very stable, they're kind of level-headed. Sometimes it can tip into too much of the stickiness, too much of the grounding, and it becomes a laziness and a feeling of being lethargic. So actually they would want to incorporate things like chilies and spices to invigorate and to awaken and to get a bit more of fire back. So it's just about understanding where you noticed an imbalance. And even from saying those three, you might resonate with, you know, the medical system is incredible for so many reasons. You know, if you have a car crash and you break your leg, there's not much that Ayurveda can do to fix your broken leg. You know, there's amazing spices and the healing properties of foods like ginger that will help your recovery from something like a broken leg. But in the moment of a broken leg, you need to go to hospital and get that sorted, right? So it's, I think what's important to say is that it's not one or the other. And I'm a big, big believer in natural medicine, but also, you know, get your blood tests checked. Make sure that there's nothing else going on. Don't just do one and not the other. Mm-hmm. Of course, you should be wary of what medications you're taking, but you need to kind of see what works best for you. And I think exploring both is a great thing to do. It's hard to say on an individual level whether it's a medical condition or whether it's caused by inflammation. And the best way to know is to do something like an Ayurvedic consultation, which I would do that with you, with anyone who's listening who wants to understand a bit more. And then we go into every different section of your life and we look into what is happening. Okay. And you kind of get a bit more of an understanding as well, because you're like, oh yeah. Like, and you know, the amount of people when I've done the Ayurvedic consultations, I remember having one patient who twice a year had a particular issue arise for them. And I said, well, when did it start? And is it twice a year, kind of different months, or is it the same? And they realized, you know, kind of like they hadn't done that thinking before. And they realized on the consultation, oh, well, yeah, twice a year, it's every summer and it's every kind of July and every December. So then my next question is, what's happening in July and December every year? And again, a revelation of that's when I go home, back to my home country, and visit my family for a month. And it's even, you know, them having that realization on the consultation of, oh, like there's a connection there. There's a link that this is arising in my body twice a year, the same months every single year when this occasion is happening. So what is it about being in that situation, in that environment, that's creating this illness? And it's that's where the magic lies, because you then realize everything is interlinked and we're so much more interconnected than we think we are. So sometimes it's a medical issue, absolutely, but you want to look into kind of what else is going on in your life to figure out whether there could be something else that you could do to help it. Because you can take medication for something for years and years and years and it could never go away. And then you have a healing session and you understand the reason and it never comes back again.
So we've sort of uncovered at very top level yoga, meditation, breath work and Ayurveda. I think what would be really nice to sort of wrap up the podcast, Angie, is your journey a little bit. So you were in tech, you haven't always been, you know, a yogi professionally as such. And you made a conscious decision to change your career, which is something we talk a lot about on the podcast. We have a lot of people reaching out to us thinking they've gone down one path, but it's too late to change. I can't take the pay cut, like all these different things. I'd love to know just sort of a synopsis of you changing career, but then also the different levels of fulfillment that you've found in this new, well, it's not so new now, but this new career.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think people are always surprised to hear that I worked for the last 10 years in technology. I was the director of sales at a global company. You know, people think sales and they think director and they think completely different to a spiritual lifestyle. And it's actually, I mean, yeah, I guess the stereotype of someone who works in a sales job in a senior position isn't, you don't also think someone who meditates and does yoga. I actually think that they would be way more successful if they did, because actually, you know, any career where it's fast paced, it's intense, there's a lot of pressure. If you haven't got a good hold on managing your emotions, regulating your nervous system, you're in real trouble, because, you know, the ego attaches to a number that you've got to hit every single quarter. And if you don't hit that number, who are you? What is your self-worth? And so you've actually really got to. But what I noticed is, so 4 years into working in that job, I had a breakthrough moment with yoga. I've been practicing yoga for years and years and years, but the same reasons as you, stretching from my gym going. Never really, you know, I used to think like, what is this woo-woo? I really didn't believe in it. And then I had a moment, and then I had a moment where I was like, oh, and I just, something shifted and I wanted to learn more, and that was it. I never was interested in changing careers. I wanted to learn more and I wanted to quit my job. So I quit my job and I decided, let me try and get another job, because I'm not going to risk just like not having a job. Let me get another job. Let me defer it and let me go and do my yoga teacher training in India, because I just want to learn more. I'm just fascinated and I think it'll be a good thing to do. And I'd just gone through a breakup. So I think that also spurred me on to be like, get me out of this country. I don't want to see anyone. I just want to go be on my own. You know, when you just want to escape. So I did that. But then I came back and I started back in my tech corporate job, which I've always loved, by the way. It's never been the case if I hate it and I want to move on to something else. This was just something that fascinated me. And what was really good is that the company that I just joined, that knew that I had deferred to do my yoga teacher training, they said, why don't you teach in the office, you know, once a week after work? And I think if they hadn't said that, maybe I wouldn't have taught immediately afterwards. But that then gave me the buzz of teaching, of sharing it with people, of seeing people progress, of watching them have their breakthrough moments that I had had. And that was really addictive and I really enjoyed that. So yeah, towards the end of 2020, 2021, I then had a bit more of a mission of, okay, I'm going to really bring this online, and set up the membership platform in 2021 on Earth, started running retreats in 2021 from my house. And then it kind of was the side hustle that grew. So then when it got to a point about this time last year, when I got to a crossroads where I didn't really think I wanted to continue my corporate job, I had this side hustle that was already on its own, touch wood, doing really well. And it made sense for me to take that transition, because to what you said earlier, there are people who are scared about like taking a pay cut or, you know, moving career completely. I don't think I ever would have quit my corporate job to start a well-being business. I think it just would have felt too risky. But because I already had it and it was growing really well, it was a lot easier to make that transition.
Would you say that your tech background has helped you, because your platform is really cool and like really easy to navigate and just so engaging as soon as you get on there, and you've also got a really good social following? So has that tech background helped with growing your yoga business?
Yeah, because, you know, when you run your own business, you're doing the sales, the marketing, you need to make sure the customers are happy, all of that stuff. And a lot of my role in my previous roles in technology was about the customer experience online and how important it is to keep your customers happy. But then also from a sales perspective, how do you pitch yourself? And how do you pitch yourself without fear? Yeah. You know, you how do you picture yourself that you're not writing a whole essay and you're short and you're sharp and you're to the point and you're getting the information over really easily? So all of that really helped me have the confidence to know how to pitch myself, know how to market myself, to know how to make sure that, you know, what would I want as a customer to see from this class? I don't just want to do the class. I want to have a description underneath the class saying, what's this class about? I want to have links in the description that link out to different playlists for the person who wants to listen to music while they're practicing yoga. You know, like all of this, basically the customer journey. And that's, yeah, definitely. All, I don't regret my 10 years in corporate at all. I loved it. And I now run corporate wellbeing workshops, going into businesses and doing things on burnout and stress and helping them mindset shifts and that kind of stuff. So yeah, massively, massively helped.
I asked the question as well because I went to see Stephen Bartlett's tour a few days ago, and he said something that I absolutely loved was, what is your like real talent? And then what is your rare complementary skill? So I was thinking about myself, selfishly thinking, right, so my talent is events, mm-hmm. but then my other skill that I absolutely love is personal development. And that's why I believe the combination of those two for delivering at AIP Live is why it's so different to anybody else, because I don't think there's anybody that's got the events background that I've got with the personal development background teaming mm-hmm. together. So that's why I was thinking about you and thinking you've got a whole like heritage and all the different practices that you know about combined with that tech. And I felt like when you kindly invited me onto the platform, I could see that straight away. So it's just something for people to think about. Like if there's something you really want to pursue, but you've got this skill set, can you combine the two and make something really unique?
If the two things feel so different, maybe that is your superpower. Because maybe because they feel so different, it's yeah. like you offer something so different.
But before we do finish the podcast, Andy, the question I always ask everybody at the end is, what does Anything Is Possible mean to you?
Do you know what? I think I was really lucky and fortunate to be raised with that as a quality. You know, my mum especially, but I mean, both my parents, but especially my mum, she always really made it clear to us, you can do anything you set your mind on, like you can do it. There was never this, you're going to be held back in life, or you've got to work really hard for this. Always hard work, but it's you can. And I think that I've carried through. And of course there's moments of self-doubt, but I think always holding on to the power of your mind, because if you don't believe in the power of your mind, you can't believe anything is possible. So I think it's, for me, it's about always reminding myself and coming back to the awareness of how powerful we are as human beings. And a lot of the time that can be stripped away from us, and we always go into authority figures for validation. But if you come back to yourself, you, all the answers are there. And believing and trusting in yourself more, I think is how I connect in with that concept of anything is possible. You know, yes, you can learn from other people, you can be inspired by other people, that's all wonderful, but never lose your own power.
Well, how lucky to be brought up in that kind of environment as well, because not everybody is. So, well, thank you so much for having come on the podcast. We're going to be posting as well on our social channels how people can join your platform, and also with a special discount code, which I would highly encourage everybody to do. But thank you for being a guest.
Thank you for having me.
Have you been wondering what Anything Is Possible Live 2024 is all about? It's a 12-hour personal development experience from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Beyond the amazing content that is going to help you achieve your dreams, we have got mega brands, delicious food and drink, unique activations, and much more. This is the sign you have been waiting for. It is time to invest in yourself and be part of something amazing. I really hope to see you there. Link in the bio to buy your tickets.